නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ නමෝ තස්සේ භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්සේ. So we were discussing Dvaitanupassana Sutta, which is one of the very, very interesting suttas available in the Sutta Nipata, one of the ancient books which is comprising of early Buddhist teachings. Where the interesting feature of this Sutta Nipata collected discourses are its aim. Aim is nothing but the Arhantship. So Buddha has delivered those Dhamma discourses for many people, so they are fairly, we can say they are destined to become Arhants, so they are fairly with good fortune. And typically in Dhamma, people are mentioned like Uggatithanyu, Vipatithanyu, Neyya, Padaparama. So Uggatithanyu is the ones, just a short, brief Dhamma sermon is enough. A kind of a...
Bhante, we can't hear you.
Okay, I hope you can hear me now.
Yeah, now we can hear you.
Okay, somehow it was muted. So basically, the interesting feature of this Suttanipata sermons is that its direction towards the Arhantship. So basically, Buddha has given instructions, sometimes very brief instructions, and the people who heard them are fairly intelligent and again filled with a lot of perfections. So they were able to fulfill their aspiration. So there are sometimes many in the many suttas, there are verses and concisely mentioned the path, and the listeners are fairly attuned to recognize Buddha's teaching and practice and ultimately become Arhants. So that's a very interesting feature we can see in the Sutta Nipata. And this Dvaitanupassana Sutta also very similar. So things are very concise, but explaining the path more profound way. So we need to make it little descriptive in order for us to understand, because we are not into that very intelligent level. So we need certain amount of description. So we are going through one by one in this Sutta Nipata Dvaitanupassana Sutta categories. So Dvaitanupassana Sutta is based upon Buddha's teaching on mundane and supramundane path. In one side, Buddha shows what is the mundane path and what is the practice you need to consider, and as a result of that practice, you are able to shift to the supramundane path. So this mundane and supramundane, so this dryad is something that we need to recognize. So Buddha here emphasized that is the aim of the practice, that is the aim of listening to the Dhamma. What is your aim in listening to those teachings that are wholesome, noble, emancipating, leading to enlightenment? So this is a question Buddha asked from those monks, and then he himself has given the answer. You should answer them thus: for the accurate knowledge of things arranged in dyads. So that means we have to know two sides. So we need to recognize, are we in the mundane, worldly side? Are we experiencing some kind of a stress, some kind of unsatisfactoriness, some kind of suffering? Then we are in the mundane side. On the other hand, by recognizing that, understanding that, if we apply the teaching, if we apply our vipassana practice, then as a result of that, if we are able to establish in the kind of a relaxed, non-burning relinquishment and without holding anything, so that is, then we are very much getting closer to the supramundane path. So therefore these two contemplations, recognizing the present moment, what is the state of the mind, if it is very much engulfed in the mundane side, if we are very much attached, stuck in the mundane side, then that is the time we need to practice, and so that we can shift back to the supramundane side. So therefore, this sutta is not aimed for beginners in a way. So you need certain amount of understanding you need certain amount of practical experience for this to understand. At least if you are able to establish yourself in anicitta state, unassociated state, non-grasping state for a while, then you at least have tasted what is Buddha has meant here. So that non-grasping state can be considered as a temporary nibbana, can be considered as a kind of a conditioned achievement of nibbana, but the full achievement of nibbana is unconditioned. But for the moment, till we have certain amount of understanding, till we have the strength of the insights, one can maintain a liberated mind, one can maintain a temporary liberated mind, temporary unattached mind, temporary freed mind. So that one has to recognize. So in order to recognize that, we need to practice. So that is no argument. So we need to practice. So once we practice time to time, we may be able to experience that freedom. We may be able to taste that freedom. So that freedom has to be further enhanced. That freedom has to be further developed, cultivated, maximized. And we can say we have to consolidate that. So that is the theme of this sutta. So how to further that practice, how to enhance that deliverance, how we can further live in that supramundane sight, how we can further abide by unattached state of the mind, so that we are further and further, without much effort, being able to live harmoniously, without stress, without an attachment, without grasping, without holding, without getting entangled. So that is the path. So that is the aim. Now, in this sutta, the arrangement is based on 16 such contemplations. So the first contemplation we already discussed. So that is based on the Four Noble Truths. So there are first two truths. That is the suffering and the cause of suffering, the origin of suffering, comes to the mundane side. So that is the one contemplation, that is the first contemplation. On the other hand, as a result of that recognition, we may be able to understand what is ongoing suffering, what is ongoing unsatisfactoriness present at the moment. So probably we may be able to recognize what is the cause. So once we are able to recognize the cause, we can let go of that cause, abandon that cause, so that we are able to minimize suffering and ultimately the suffering is ceased. So where we end up with, that is into the second side, so to the supramundane side, getting closer to Nibbana. Now the mind is released, now the mind is free from stress, any unsatisfactoriness, mind is quiet, happy, and we can say equanimous. So that is the first method mentioned in this sutta, where one has to recognize within oneself how these four truths can be practically used in our practice. So the result is actually where we are getting to the second side, or where we are getting to the what we call the supramundane side, where we are getting closer to Nibbana, not yet fully attained, but at least to some extent trying to experience the calm, relaxed, non-burning, unattached, unassociated state. So that is very much the theme. Now, today actually we can start the next part. So that is with respect to another subject called acquisitions. Acquisitions are basically the Pali term called as upadhi. So what is upadhi? And what is the contemplation that Buddha recommends in this sutta? Whatever suffering originates is all conditioned by acquisition. This is one contemplation. And the second contemplation is, with the remainderless fading away and cessation of acquisitions, there is no origination of suffering. So this is the second contemplation. Now, typically we think acquisitions are required, and therefore we need to acquire so many things. So we need to acquire a house, we need to acquire some wealth, and we need to acquire fair amount of skill, and we have to know a kind of a professional skill so that we can earn some money, we can live in a, we can work for a institution or kind of a designation, occupation, and we have to have certain other skills like sports or singing or whatever it is, so that we can build a personality. And we have to have our children and spouse, and there should be a certain amount of social recognition. We have to earn a name, a reputation. And these are the things that we typically give more prominence, and we think that they are quite important. And this is how we build our ego. This is how we build our personality. So this personality, so what is the personality? So what are the things that we acquire? So what are the things that we are using to build the personality? How I am creating my self-image? So what are the components contributing to build a kind of a self-image? So that is where actually we need to understand at the present moment how a self is made. So all those contributing factors we can consider as upadhi, as the acquisitions. And typically in the what we call attakata, the commentary, so therefore there are a few different areas are recognized: khandupadhi, kilesupadhi, abhisankharupadhi, and panchakama gunupadhi. So there are four areas mentioned in the commentary which are contributing towards the self-image, contributing towards how we are building a personality. So there are many overlappings here. Khandupadhi, so there are the way that we are looking at. So we may be attached to form aggregate. Using that, we can create a personality. We may be attached to feelings aggregate, holding that. As a result of that, we can create a personality. And we may be attached to perceptions aggregate, using which we can create a personality. We can attach to formations aggregate. As a result of that, we can create a personality. And we have our volitions, we have our own actions, and that is what I am geared to perform, that is what I am ambitious. So that creates the presence of a self. So using the formations aggregate, therefore I can create a personality. And using consciousness aggregate, that means using eyes I am seeing, so I become a seer. Using ears I can listen, so I become a listener. Using the tongue, I am tasting, so I am a taster. Using the nose, I can sense the various fragrances, so I am a sensor in that sense. And through the body, I can recognize various tangibles. Through the contact, in that sense, I am performing myself. And there are thoughts going on in the mind, I am thinking, so I am a thinker. There are thoughts, so I am available. That's a very fundamental way of recognizing a self. So there is a Western psychological statement. There are thoughts, and thinking is going on, so I am living, so I am there. Simple as that. So when thinking is there, so I can hold it, I can have a kind of a possessive attitude of it. And I think, since thinking is there, I am there. Simple as that. So likewise, with respect to aggregates, we can see, so all aggregates are contributing, once we are attached to them, towards the personality view. So that's why sometimes in Dhamma, it is mentioned as 20 ways are there to contribute towards this personality view, what we call the Sakkayaditti. And that is one way of explanation. And then kilesupadhi, that means different defilements are there. So once you feel really angry, So you feel presence of yourself. And it is not that once you are somewhat not angry, kind of cool, you don't feel much about your presence. But if you want to be, you have to feel much of your presence, your personality, then you are an arrogant character, you are an anger character. So then you are very active, very, very present. On the other hand, when you are going through a lot of lustful thoughts, you are burning with lust, and you can do various notorious things, and you feel your presence. That is I want to satisfy my senses, I want to satisfy my desires. And you sometimes even not thinking about someone's health or their considerations, but you are driven by desires and you feel strong presence of your ego, strong presence of yourself. And similarly, maybe if you have a lot of conceit, that's another area how we have our presence. And if we feel kind of healthy and others are not that healthy, so you may feel that you are a fortunate one, very lucky person. So you are feeling the kind of a presence of yourself. Assume that you are with a lot of other skills, that you are capable of performing singing, dancing, through which you can show your performance. Others are enjoying that, others are appreciating your performance. So you feel yourself, you feel your presence. You can maintain your self-figure, self-image. And there may be wealth, so you become really a wealthy person. You can dominate others, you can influence others, and you feel that you are the ones helping them. You are very rich, and many others are coming to you, they are asking your help, and you are very generous, and you are giving them something, and they appreciate it. So you feel your presence. Even through these good things, say you are generous, you are a wealthy person, and you are becoming a very famous donator, and you donate many things, so you are a very good level, a good side, image is built. On the other hand, say if you are a kind of a thugger, say you are dominating the others by using your kind of power, you have invested a lot of power, and as a result of that, say you are being a notorious someone, and that is also another way of feeling presence. So that's why people are very like to, even though that they know this is not ethical and this is against the social norms, but still they continue to behave like that because they feel that their presence, their ego is boosted. So all that comes in a way how the defilements are dominating the mind. So when defilements are dominating the mind, strong presence of I, strong presence of self is experienced. And then abhisankharupadi. And if there is a little experience, you don't feel much about your presence, so you need to fabricate it. You need to contribute towards it. You need to change it. You need to show your colors, and you need to create something. Assume that there is a little thought arise, and you can't simply ignore it, you can't simply let it go. Rather, you need to quickly jump to it, you need to quickly hold it, think further about it, contribute towards it, you need to change it, prepare it, fabricate it, and ultimately you are becoming something, you become emotional and you feel strong presence. So we are doing this fabricating process. So whenever things are happening, we need to contribute, we need to prepare it further. I need to put my 5 cents, I need to put my contribution. I can't simply stay back and watch the scene, but I need to put my contribution. So how we are participating into the picture, how we are participating into maybe the incident. We can't simply witness the incident, but we need to participate in the incident. So that contribution, that participation, that change, that creativity, and how we further fabricate. There is an incident, so we are contributing, we are changing it further. There is a social status, okay, I am contributing it further, I want to change. There is an injustice going on, so I am going to change it. I want to make the society more reasonable. So likewise, either to the better side or either to the wrong side. So I am contributing, I am fabricating, I am participating, I am creating. So that strong presence of self is recognized. So abhisankhara. So further fabrication, further contribution, further construction is there. So that is another way that we are developing this self-image. So that is another upadhi, a type of upadhi. Then panchakama guna. So we all in the human realm, so we all want beautiful sights, beautiful sounds, smells and tastes. And the tangibles. So these are the five sensual cords. And this is what we are very much going after. So this is what government is promising us. Okay, we are going to give this much of facilities, this much of infrastructure development, so that we can quickly travel to one place from to another place. And this much of facilities are there. You can quickly enjoy your senses. So all these things are going to be available, so please watch us. So the panchakama, so these five sensual cords, if it is available, if they are abundant, we can quickly access them, then we call it is the development. So this is how we show our status. So if I have all these, then I am a wealthy person, a well-to-do. So when I possess a lot of sights, the ability to see a lot of sights, I have a very big, huge TV, I have a theater. So all these things are there, then I can, my status is highlighted. So I can listen to music, I can sing, all that is there, so my self-image is highlighted. So I acquire a lot of sense and all, so my presence is highlighted. So that's why different kinds of incense or what we call the scents are there. So that my presence among others is somewhat uplifted. And we are going through various demands and we want to acquire my loved ones. I want to be with them. I want to have their presence. I want to hug them. So this is how at that moment my self-image is boosted. So this panchakama, so the five sensual cords, also boosting ourselves, satisfy ourselves. So that is also considered as upadhi. So that means it's a wide range of things are there. When we are looking at them from the upadhi point of view, or acquisitions point of view, so we can see how much we are using them to prepare a self, generate a self. Now in this sutta, Buddha beautifully mentioned, now it is a kind of a creates acquisition. So he creates acquisition. So the very, very interesting term here, as Bhikkhu Bodhi also has highlighted, upadhi is not simply something one acquires, but something one actively creates, and thus something over which one can exercise control. So when you feel that you have some control, you are the boss. So self-image is highlighted, so you can easily maintain your prepared self. So we purposely create these upadhis, therefore. So that's why we are going after maybe a better education, maybe we are going to a developed country and we want to teach our children. All these things are kind of acceptable norms. And we can do that. Are we using that to boost our ego? So that is the problem. I mean, going deep learning and developing a skill so that you can find a job and maintaining a healthy body and developing certain other skills. All right, no problem. But are we using those skills? Are we using those wealth? Are we using them as acquisitions so that our self-control is there? Our boosted ego is there. So that is the problem. So the ignorant person, therefore, as mentioned here, creates acquisitions, encounters suffering again and again. So that is the other side. Now, we assume that we have the control. We assume that we can acquire all these things. We can maintain that. I have children, so I have the ability to control them. They should listen to me. They should behave the way I want. So this is how we think. And we try to maintain our command. But once the children are going to do something which I don't approve, then I am in the trouble. Or if my body going through certain sickness, then again I am little disturbed. If the economy is collapsing, then I am disturbed. If any other situation is changing against my what we call the desires, then I am disturbed. So likewise, even though we acquire all these things thinking that I can control, so they are mine, I can use them to maintain my figure, maintain my self-image, but they are not behaving the way we want. So they are subjected to impermanence. The law of impermanence is everywhere. So all these acquisitions are continuously changing, continuously subjected to arising and passing away. So we can't actually maintain the way we want. So that is the point that we have missed. We didn't recognize their impermanent nature, non-governability, their inherent unsatisfied nature. We didn't recognize. And without knowledge, so we have acquired them thinking that they can contribute to develop or maintain the self-image. Now here Buddha mentions suffering in their many forms in the world originate based on acquisition. The ignorant dullard who creates acquisition encounters suffering again and again. So there's a very interesting what we call a dialogue has happened between Daniya and the Buddha. Daniya is a cowherd, and we can say he's the owner and is a very rich person. He had thousands of cattle, and one day actually he was quite happy because everything is in order. There's a huge rain coming in, but all the cows are properly put to their proper places. They are quite safe, and his house also is very well thatched, and the rain can't disturb, and his wife is with him, and his children are also with him. All are quite safe. So he's inviting the rain. Okay, if you want, you can rain. I don't mind, because I am quite safe now. But Buddha knew that this rain going to ruin them. So Buddha approached them and have the kind of a dialogue. Buddha is actually repeating verses to this exclaiming verses of the Daniya. So Daniya is telling, Nandati putte, and so he actually appreciates his wealth, worldly affairs, worldly acquisitions, but Buddha tells the opposite, telling how impermanent they are and how unsatisfactory they are. And therefore Buddha says that I have nothing basically. So you have many things, but I have nothing. So kind of a dialogue between the mundane side as well and the supramundane side. So Daniya is trying to safeguard, protect, appreciate the mundane acquisitions. Buddha is trying to convince him about the supramundane spiritual achievements. So ultimately Daniya was very well convinced, and he started having faith on Buddha. But interestingly, Mara also in the background, and he came and he put this verse. So now Mara is telling, Nandati puttehi puttima, goma gohi tateva nandati. Upadihi narasya nandana, nahiso nandati yo nirupadi. So he say, one who has sons delights because of sons. Said Mara to the evil one. Said Mara, the evil one. One with cattle delights because of cattle. For acquisitions are a man's delight. Without acquisitions, one does not delight. So this is the Mara's view. So that's why he promotes all these acquisitions. So people are acquiring as much as possible. They want them. They want many things. They are not satisfied with a little. So they want many things. They want to have several houses, maybe several lands, maybe several cars, maybe few jobs. And even though they have enough wealth, still not satisfied. They need more. Every time mind is asking more. Uno loko, atitto, tanha, daso. So Buddha mentioned. So therefore, these people are always going through a kind of a frustration because they feel that it is not enough. I don't feel satisfied, contented. Instead, I feel I need some more. There is inner thirst going on. So they further acquire. They want more, so they get more, and they further acquire. Now they have to look after some more things. So this is the way of things going on. So Buddha tells the opposite. Sochati puttehi puttima, gopiyo gohi tateva sochati. Upadihi narasya sochana, nahi so sochati yo nirupadi. So nirupadi is a term for arahant. And Buddha mentioned, one who has sons sorrows because of sons. One with cattle likewise sorrows because of cattle. For acquisitions are a man's sorrow. Without acquisitions, one does not sorrow. Now you can see this is a complete opposite of the worldly path. So that's why we need to carefully understand this sutta, Dvaitanupassana sutta, aiming towards the higher training. It is not mundane, a ritualistic kind of Buddhism. Rather, it is the deep core Buddhist teachings are included here. How one has recognized the importance of the spiritual practice, and Buddha is giving the higher training here. So how one can abandon acquisitions by knowing their kind of empty nature, non-governable nature, impermanent nature, unsatisfactory nature, are we able to let go if from our mind without let them occupy the mind? So there are many suttas aligned with this theme. Another sutta is Samma Paribhajaniya Sutta. How properly one can abandon things. How properly one is relinquishing things. And maintain that relinquished life or homeless life. How one can lead a successful homeless life. So that is the theme of this Samma Paribhajaniya Sutta. So there Buddha mentioned, Naso Upadhesu Sarameti Adanesu Vinaya Chandaragam. So anisito ananyaneyo samma so loke paribhajaya. Now a spiritual seeker, now he has abandoned things, he has relinquished things, and he does not find a core in acquisitions. He does not find any value in acquisitions. So that's why he has abandoned. He might had good friends or his luxurious vehicles or luxurious apartment or his children or wife or parents, his very lucrative job, but he has abandoned. So that's a different mentality actually. So typically people want more and more. They can't satisfy with something. They want many. But there is an opposite side. There are certain people, they simply let go of everything. They simply abandon everything and they renunciate. Kind of a renunciate to happiness. They are going to enjoy. Not by acquiring, but by abandoning. That's a complete opposite way of thinking. And from economic terms, we can't understand this. We can't justify it. And we think that they are utter foolish, and they think they are crazy, because what they have simply given up. So he doesn't find a core in acquisitions. And he removed the desire. He, having removed desire and lust for things, taken up, and he is no more dependent on them now. So those acquisitions can't influence him. And he is not being led by others. So others can't simply put terms and conditions, because he is a very independent person. So others can influence if he has many acquisitions, and if he want to maintain them, then others can influence him. Now say, for example, you acquired a loan and using which you build a house. Now you are dependent. Maybe the mortgage bank. So you are quite responsible. So you have to pay the monthly installments. The government can influence you. They can increase the whatever the rates, interest rates, so you have to pay more. Or sometimes a mortgage bank put their own different conditions. You have to abide by that, because you acquired something. But if you haven't acquired that, then you have no such obligations. You are free. So typically, not having any loans is considered as a blessing. But today, economics terms have taken the complete opposite. So they respect the amount of credit we have acquired. So how much credit we have. And we have our credit card, and we acquire many things using the credit card, and we don't think about how we are going to pay off. Anyway, we are acquiring many things, because many beautiful things are there, attractive things are there. So I am going to supermarket, I acquire things, and then at the cashier I simply give my credit card, and through loan I am acquiring things. So then I feel satisfied. But I haven't really paid. The payment happens through installments, and I am maintaining my credit value. But in the past, people didn't do this way of economics, but they did kind of a different way of economics. So they thought, okay, if I don't have any kind of a credit, if I don't have any loans, I owe nothing to the others, then I feel comfortable. Because I have no responsibilities. They don't come and knock on my door asking the installment, asking the interest. They are not sending me letters. They are not sending me reminders, because I have not owning anything to anyone. Maybe I am contented with little I have. So what I have is just, maybe I can say it belongs to me, and nothing belongs to others. Nothing belongs to the bank, nothing belongs to the government, or any other mortgage bank, or any other institution. So they can't influence me. I haven't acquired a loan. I haven't built my house through a loan. I haven't acquired my car, my vehicle, going through a lease. So if one can think like that, then they feel free. So therefore, one synonym Buddha given for karma, given for what we call the sensual cords, is that very much like we are acquiring a loan. So when we are going through a lot of sensual satisfaction, sensual gratification, Buddha say you are very much like acquired a loan. You have to pay it off. But if you are able to abandon desire, which is asking all this, then you are very much like have no loan. So they can't have any influence on you. So this is a different way of looking at things. And the Samma Paribhajaniya Sutta. So there Buddha highlights, he does not find a core in acquisitions, having removed desire and lust for things taken up, not dependent, not to be led by others, he would properly wander in the world. And then another sutta, Vasetta Sutta, Hitva Ratincha Arating, Siti Bhutang Nirupading, Sabba Loka Bibhung Virang, Tamahang Brumi Brahmana. Now here, actually Buddha explained who is the real Brahmin, who is the real Arahant. One who has discarded delight and discontent. So he has no any sensual delight by acquiring things, by satisfying senses. On the other hand, he is not discontented either. Typically we think if I don't have things, then I'll be unhappy. I'm worried because I have nothing basically. Kind of a defeated mentality. But the opposite has happened here. He has nothing basically. He is not expecting, but he feels victorious. He feels contented and become cool. Siti Bhutang, become cool. Nirupading, become cool but without any acquisitions. Sabba Loka Bibhung Vira, a hero who has overcome the whole world. He is the one I call a Brahmi. So he is the Arahant. And then Sabhya Sutta, also another instance where Sabhya, that we already discussed this Sabhya Sutta, that the wanderer Sabhya is praising the Buddha. Upadite samatikkanta, asavate padalita, sihosi anupadin anupadano, pahina bhaya bheravo. Now he is praising the Buddha, telling, you have transcended the acquisitions. You have sundered the influxes. You are a lion without clinging. You have abandoned fear and dread. Now these are instances available in the Sutta Nipata itself, how Buddha and the others have appreciated this Nirupadi state, where the acquisitions are abandoned. So mind is not occupied by the upadis. Instead, mind is free from upadis. And another interesting instance is found in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta in Majjhima Nikaya, where Buddha mentioned, Tasseva kopanna pubbe avidassuno upadhi honti, samatta samadinna, tyasa pahina honti, ucchinna mula, thala vattukata anabhavakata, ayating anuppada dhamma. So that means, previously, so we considered upadis are very, very important. These acquisitions are very, very important. I need this, I need that, I need social status, I need education, I need all these satisfying sanctuary, whatever the acquisitions. I need to go through a lot of sights. I need to see a lot of sights. I need to listen to music. I need to have the best car. I need to have a very luxurious house. I need to have a degree. I need to have the best education. So all these, so we have given so much of importance. And so we created all that. And he undertook and accepted acquisitions. So that is our former life. So now here Buddha is asking or preaching to Venerable Pukkusati in the Dhatu Vibhanga Sutta. And he said, so this is the way that we have worked. Pukkusati is actually a former king. Now he is a recluse. Now he is a monk. So Buddha say, now you as a king, so you have acquired so many things. Now he has abandoned them. Tyasa pahina honti. Now you have abandoned them. Tyasa pahina honti. Ucchinna mula thala vattu kata. So now you have abandoned them, cut them off at the root, made them like a palm stump, done away with them so that they are no longer subject to future arising. Now the mind is not getting occupied because of these acquisitions anymore. So that is the very much the blessing. The more you have, the more responsibility is. But if you have less, only the essentials you have, only then you have to consider them, you have to take care of them. But you have nothing much. You have to only take care of very little things. You don't worry much about the thieves. You don't think that government would acquire that because you have very basic things. So that is the monk's life actually Buddha is aimed at. So that is the renunciative life the Buddha is aiming at. So this is not a sutta which is aiming at kind of the mundane development of economic terms. But this sutta is basically talking the very higher level training preached towards the renunciants, preached towards the people who are fairly aimed at Nibbana, aimed at spiritual development. So we need to clearly understand that also. Otherwise, this sutta and the teachings appear like kind of going against the social norms. But there are people who are attuned towards these spiritual achievements rather than simply acquiring economic success or whatever social status or whatever becoming wealthy and all that. They may still maintain sometimes a family life. They may still maintain a mundane, whatever this household life. Even though they are wearing household clothes, internally they can be monks. The opposite also true, by the way. There are certain monks, but they are not really aligned with these teachings. They acquire many things, and they want to boost their self-image. And they have maybe many temples or whatever the things, and maybe several vehicles, bank accounts, many, many robes, many, many other belongings. Even though they are called monks, they are not really monks. They are like householders. So we need to understand how our spiritual maturity is working here. So there may be monks who are going aligned with these teachings, who are maintaining very little and does not want to acquire many things. So they find that as a burden. So they, as much as possible, they are keeping their mind clear from all this. And they are very much aligned with this. So that is the good side. And again, there are lay people, even though they have their household stuff, they are householders, still they like to maintain only the essentials, do not want to crowd their mind with many things, with many responsibilities, with many acquisitions. Rather, only a little is there, that is enough. I am happy, I am contented. Let me give more prominence to my spiritual achievements. So there are people like that. So the theme or the aim of this sutta is for them. And so, here in the Dhatuvibhanga Sutta, Buddha mentioned, Tasma evan samannagato bhikkhu imina paramena chagadittanin samannagato hoti. Eso hi bhikkhu paramo ariyo chago yadidang sambhu padi patinissaggo. So this is the best of relinquishment. Therefore, bhikkhu possessing this relinquishment possesses the supreme foundation of relinquishment. For this bhikkhu is the supreme noble relinquishment, namely the relinquishing of all acquisitions. Now, this sabbhupadi patnissagga is a synonym for nibbana. So, your mind is not being bothered by any kind of acquired stuff, any kind of acquisitions, any kind of belongings are not interrupting the mind. Mind is not occupied by any of those related thoughts. Mind can be kept empty without any disturbance, without any interruptions, without any images of those belongings. Now, say for example, you have, as I mentioned, say you took a loan and you built a house, but you couldn't pay the mortgage. Now the people, whoever, landlord or maybe the mortgage bank, now they want to return the house. Now, can you keep your mind free? So mind get again and get occupied about this incident. What's going to happen? How you have built the house? So you have spent a lot of money, you have acquired the loan and you build the house, you go through all these tedious processes. You met the architecture, you met the plumber and all that, the carpenters, everyone. And then you have spent a lot of your time, you did a lot of planning and now you build the house, but you couldn't pay the mortgage. Now they are asking the house. So how much of thoughts are occupying the mind. How much of, say, images of your house, beloved house, is now occupying the mind? And how troublesome it is. Now, we can see, when we acquire something, so it occupies the mind. It takes the space of our mind. But if we are able to maintain only the essentials, and even that we have understood quite impermanent, and we are using that, recognizing their proper purpose, not to show any self-image, then we know the purpose of it. So that is why for four acquisitions or four requisites, Buddha mentioned the contemplations. So as monks, so Buddha mentioned, okay, while you are having pindapata, the alms, so you need to contemplate why you are eating. What is the purpose? And when you are using robes, again Buddha mentioned you need to contemplate why you are having robes. What is the purpose? And when you are using your kuti or whatever the dwelling place, you need to contemplate, so why I am using this house, this kuti, this whatever the dwelling hut. And whenever you are taking any kind of medicine, again Buddha say you need to contemplate what is the cause, what is the reason. By using such kind of contemplations, you are not making any kind of a defilement as a result of those usage. Because you know the purpose, you know what is the exact reason I am using this. I can't maintain this body without them, I need their support. So that is the sole purpose. So without getting entangled to those acquisitions, those requisites, now I am using them. So you, as much as possible, keep the mind undefiled. Keep the mind pure without getting entangled with these requisites. Now as lay people also, at least to some extent, you can do it. Say when you are using your vehicle, can you recognize that you are using it? Because you can't simply walk long distance, so you are using the vehicle. Not to show your social status, so not to show off your something, but simply you can't walk, so you are using a vehicle. So why we are using a house? Because raining and sun is there, and the, you know, the wind is there, other snakes and all that external hindrances are there. So I need to cover some place. I need to cover up my body. So I am using a house. So why am I eating? So this body requires a certain amount of food every day. It is a fully dependent on food. So I have to supply food. So that's why I am eating. So time to time this body gets sick. So I have to look after it. So I am taking medicine. So likewise, if we understand the proper purpose, then we are not making any self-image or ego or conceit by using all these different stuff. So in a way, when we are trying to align ourselves with the practice, so these are very interesting areas we can think of. And the interesting point highlighted in this Dhatavibhanga Sutta is how you can keep your mind free from all these acquisitions. When they are trying to boost the ego, how we can recognize it? When you are trying to occupy the mind, how we can recognize it and quickly let it go, so that you are maintaining the clarity of the mind. You are maintaining the emptiness of the mind. Without allowing these acquisitions to acquire the mind. Now that's why Buddha highlighted in this Dvaitanupassana Sutta, therefore, understanding, one should not create acquisition, contemplating it as the genesis of origin of suffering. If I acquire it, if I allow those acquisitions to occupy mind, it generates suffering. It burdens the mind. So it is no more empty. The clarity is not there. Mind's clarity is now very much like disturbed. You feel heavy because something is disturbing. And I think that it belongs to me. I think that it is important. So I am occupied. I am thinking about it. So you are no more free. But if we are able to recognize when these acquisitions are coming and we recognize it, we did not allow to occupy the mind, simply let it go, relaxed, then you are back in the Nibbana, we can say. You are back in the calmness, you are back in the peacefulness, because you recognize. So how these acquisitions are now coming to occupy the mind, how certain thoughts are trying to promote a self using those acquisitions. So you precisely recognize that, properly recognize that. So you allow that to fade away, again establish back in the emptiness. So if we are able to practice like this, so Buddha promised, we may be able to achieve the arahantship or at least the non-returner state. So the rewards are tremendous in that sense, but quite difficult. Because you can see, I mean, even though we can tell, we can talk, preach like this, so still we are bound by many things. We still think that many things are important. I can't give up all. I can't simply go to the road. And that is also not the real message of this sutta. It is not that you are suggested or asked to abandon everything and you become a monk or nun. Rather, while going through the typical household life, can you maintain a free mind? When we have so many skills, do we really need to boost our ego using those skills? When we have a car, when we have a house, when we have our children, when we have our education, do we really need to use them to boost our ego? Can't we use them innocently so that things are, you know, we are maintaining relationships, we are continuing our life, but no self-image, not much interested about self-image or personality view, simply doing the job, simply kind of disseminating our obligations. So these are areas actually we can learn through this sutta. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma session or the Sutta teaching session. Now I like to open the session for questions. So if anyone is interested of asking questions, please raise your hand. Seems like nothing is there. Shalika, are you there?
Yes, I'm here. Okay. Yeah, Chitra Devi, please unmute yourself and present your question.
Thank you. Now we are supposed to try to lose the sense of self, right, Bhante? And not acquire things in the world, in this world.
Mm-hmm.
However, that's a very practically, it's not always possible because it's not possible.
Mm-hmm.
But my question really is, does this whole process come gradually, as a gradual process, as we live the Dhamma and practice the Dhamma and try to get rid of defilements as we go along?
Mm-hmm.
Does this process of non-self actually develop gradually? Because we're living the Dhamma rather than a sort of deliberately depriving ourselves of A, B and C or whatever, family or whatever.
Exactly.
So that is my question.
It has to be a smooth letting go process. Rather than a forceful letting go process, it has to be a very smooth letting go process dependent on the understanding. So that's why we know that yathabhuta jnana dasana causes nibbida viraga. When we know things as they truly are, the result is the disenchantment and the dispassion. So till we don't have that, then actually we may have to forcefully let go of things, though that is very artificial, that is troublesome, that creates friction to the mind. Rather, when we thoroughly know about things, when we thoroughly investigated things and know their true nature, so the letting go process is a smoother one. It won't be a big issue because mind is ready to do that. Mind understood its true nature. That's why the Vipassana practice is an essential component of developing that wisdom. So that's a very beautiful simile.
Yes.
Actually, we discussed during the Magandhya Sutta, you can remember, that there was a
yes.
Blind person, but he was cheated by a salesman, and he offered a black cloth, telling it is a white cloth, white, beautiful, and you know, very expensive cloth, but it is not really that. But this blind person was cheated, and he thought it is, and so he was wearing it to the festivals, and you know, that he's with the understanding, with the misunderstanding, that this is a very beautiful, really worthy cloth. But later his friends and the relatives took him to an eye surgeon, and he being completely cured, now he see what I am wearing. So at that moment he understand, oh, this is not a white cloth, this is not an expensive cloth either, this is not a clean cloth, so this is a completely dirty black color cloth. So that understanding helps him to give it up. So that is, that understanding is what mentioned as the Yathabhuta Jnana Dasana. So till we don't have that understanding, so it would be kind of friction for us to let go. But the more and more we understand, so that the letting go process become more and more smoother.
Yes, because we know that the, everything, the theory, I mean, the you know, like even what the Buddha said, told Bahya and the other the person, the same thing, seeing as seeing and hearing as hearing, etc. We know the theory. I mean, we know these are all elements, and these are their energy and their phenomena, and there's nothing there and nothing here and nothing in between. But it's all theory. So we have done Vipassana also, but to actually see that as it is not always...
That's a practice. That's possible. A training. So that's the training. So that Mahia and to the other, whoever the other trainees, say the Puggalas, so that's why, I mean, they have seen it to some extent, but not yet fully understood it. That's why the training is further required.
But I suppose...
Yeah.
Yes, Bhante, continue.
Yeah, so therefore, the training has to be further continued, so that when again mind go and grasp, so you need to understand that, okay, the mind again go and grasped. I better keep it in an ungrasping state. So that grasping process has to be understood then and there. When it is happening in the present moment, so we need to understand and how the grasping has happened, to which the grasping has happened. So is it possible for me to let go of that? So without getting, allowing it to grow to the, you know, the proliferative state, we need to recognize how the mind get occupied. Now, say for example, you did something, a good task. Maybe it has done 2 days ago. But today, thoughts related to that is appearing in your mind and trying to promote a self-image. So this can happen. So this can happen. And on such situation, you can understand, okay, this is not something necessary. So I don't want to create a self-image out of that good task. It was done really well. Okay, I'm happy. That's it. I don't need a second thought. I don't need to boost a self-image because of that task. So this is a different way of looking at things. So rather than, you know, you create a plaque and put your name onto the task, you simply recognize, okay, I have done my best. People are happy. I am also happy. I don't need a second thought. So let me keep the mind free from thinking, unnecessary thinking. So likewise, again and again, we need to restrain the mind. Whenever mind is talking, mind is trying to boost a self-image.
So, I mean, we do all the time, you know, try to break up the object and understand that it's impermanent and so forth. We are doing it all the time, but then we have to be patient, I suppose. But
Yes.
Because we know everything, meaning we know the theory, you know, and we also, when we are meditating, we experience the sense of impermanence of this body and the anatta nature. But then we have to also do it as we are practicing in the real life, the daily life, isn't it?
Correct.
It's not always easy to break up some object or some person in front of you into the elements or whatever. I mean, you can work it out in your mind, but you can't. Doesn't happen in front of your eyes, does
correct,
it?
Correct.
I don't know whether it happens to the arahats. Does it happen to the arahats?
So in the suttas, it is mentioned like that. Basically, if even things are beautiful or even things are ugly, so they are not making a significant impact to the arahant's mind. So they don't get mixed up to the mind. So arahant's mind is fairly clean, continuously, very much like.
Yeah, but I suppose they also see it as we see it.
Yeah.
It is making an impression. I think that's what it is. Because you can't actually see nothing, no, Bhante. You can't see only energy. I mean, to the naked eye, can you? I mean,
yes.
I don't know.
Yeah. They see the things.
Arhat can't see energy and smoke in front of them. I mean, they see the object, but they move on.
Yes.
Is that right?
Correct. Yes. They know
I
the convention as convention. They
because
know
we don't need to think that the arahats are seeing these energy balls in front of them. I don't think that's quite right, no?
No.
They are seeing it just as we are seeing it.
Yes.
But the difference is that there is no craving, there is no attachment, and they move on.
Correct. So they are not...
Is that right, Bhante?
Yeah, they are not making things.
Yes. They are not proliferating. They are not making a cell. That person is also not a cell. This person also is not a cell. And they are moving on.
Correct.
Isn't that right?
Correct.
So all we have to do is what I'm hearing from you is that we just continue the practice.
Correct.
Is that right?
Right, yes.
That's all. And then one day, we will see, we will have this yatha bhuta nana dasana.
Correct. You are correct.
Hopefully. I mean, if you are practicing, then one day, I mean, whether this birth or the next or whatever, it's going to come.
Yes.
Isn't that right?
Yes. Can't you hear me?
Yes. So we have... What, Bhante?
Shalika, can't you hear me?
What is that?
We can hear you, Bhante.
We can hear you, Bhante.
So then you are getting my answer. So we can go to the next section.
What is that, Pantevi? I just know.
So that's what.
Here, I think.
So we need to further continue our practice, and the practice helps us to further improve our true knowledge about things. So then the outside things do not create things in a way. So that's why very beautifully Buddha mentioned in the what we discussed on yesterday, Kalakarama Sutta. So there are, the emptiness is thoroughly established. One does not create a person by seeing things. There is no seer.
Yes.
And similarly, he does not create a person or thing as such or something by seeing things. Mere seeing is there. And he does not proliferate.
Yes.
He does not proliferate thinking that I didn't see. So that is another clarity that he is having. And again, he has no proliferation thinking that I should see things. So these are very interesting ways how put it the whole message. So four ways of preparing or developing the understanding. Seeing is there.
Yes, I think that's very important.
Yeah, seeing is there. Apart from seeing, there is no anything or something that you are seeing. And there is no seer who is going through the scene. And again, you are not proliferating thinking, I should see things. And again, you are not proliferating thinking, I didn't see things.
I think that's a very important point, Bhante.
Yes.
I think that is a very important point, that I did not...
Yeah.
He is not saying, I did not see something.
Mm-hmm.
But for me, I think that is very profound, because we are all the time seeing things, but what we are trying to take home message is not to proliferate, not to make it my thing.
Uh-huh. Good, good. Keep going
Is that
on.
right?
Yes, keep going on.
Thank you, Chitta Devi. And now I'd like to invite Ishan to present his question.
I hope you can hear me, Bhai.
Yes, yes.
And, so the very first question that I have, it is, I think, about the semantic of this that I am trying to sort of understand.
Mm-hmm.
A word that I have over and over heard, but it seems to be, when I hear in different contexts, I get different type of understanding. And the word that I heard just now as well, what you have given the clarity to it, is the yathābhū, the jñāna dassana. Would you be kind to restate that and try to sort of give certain type of an example so I can understand what exact meaning to that? Because I think semantics matters in certain things, because I have heard and I have in different discussions, it is inappropriately used, and that usage itself gives different connotations and different meanings to it, which is sort of people like us get misguided. And I try to sort of get the real meaning so I can relate to what Dhammas. Thank you.
Yeah. So actually, this is very well explained in the Mula Pariyaya Sutta. So I am sharing Mula Pariyaya Sutta, some explanation I have given to the Sutta teaching session long time ago. So there are, so
okay.
Buddha explained basically three scenarios. So how a mundane worldling going through some sort of an experience, how a trainee, a Seka Puggala, is going through a kind of an experience, and how an Arahant and the Buddha going through an experience. So this is the three scenarios explained, and Buddha has taken 24 examples to explain this scenario, three scenarios. And for example, assume that there is a chair, and when a chair is seen by a typical ordinary person, so it is simply a chair and I am seeing the chair. So maybe it belongs to me, maybe I am sitting on the chair, maybe I am going to buy a chair. Is someone going to steal my chair? So these are the ways with respect to chair, various different kinds of thoughts are generated in his mind. So hope you can understand this part.
Yes.
Okay.
Very
so,
well.
So thank basically, you. So he hasn't understand this is a kind of prepared thing, constructed thing. So we have given a name as chair. But ultimately, intrinsically available are simply, say, four elements. So that deep understanding is he never heard of. So simply for him, it is a very beautiful, very, say, expensive chair. It's interesting. So may I going to buy it? May I going to sit on it? So if it is belong to me, is someone going to steal it? So different kinds of, many, many different levels of thinking can happen. So this is the typical experience that he may be going through. Because Buddha mentioned, he has not fully understood it. So, aparinyatam tassati vadami. So, he hasn't understood it properly. So, that's a typical thing. And then, there's an explanation given for the trainee, higher disciple, a Seka Puggala. So, he has gone through some understanding. He has gone through some practice, vipassana practice, for example. So, he has used his own body and recognize how these elements are operating, how these internally, how earth element, water element, fire element, air element is operating. So he thoroughly understood this body is nothing but the elements. And then he may be able to understand what is externally available. So those are also elements. There's no big difference. Internal elements and external elements are mere elements. So in this whole physical world is nothing but elements. So this is a kind of a direct experience, thorough understanding he had through his own practice. But still people have given names. So when they prepare things, they have given names. Maybe a chair, maybe a table, maybe a house. So likewise, people have given some names, labels, so that they can distinctly recognize these things. And so he has that conventional understanding also. But he knows intrinsically there is nothing there. Intrinsically there is nothing there, but it is empty. But they can prepare things. They can apply some paint. They can fix different components and prepare a kind of vehicle. But intrinsically there is no car, there is no bus. But once things are arranged in a certain fashion, certain manner, certain style, we can give a name as a chair. We can give a name as a vehicle. We can give a name as a bus. So like that. So he has that thorough understanding is there. But interesting thing is, even though he has seen this reality, understood this reality, still mind sometimes continue to grasp. Mind sometimes continue to look at it from the conventional point of view totally, and ultimately get entangled. Ultimately he get into grasping as well. But he has seen the reality during his practice maybe. So he needs to now apply that training again and again. So he needs to restrain himself. Even though he has this understanding, but not yet it is completely fulfilled or completely understood. So his understanding is somewhat partial. So therefore he is instructing himself, telling, do not conceive, do not conceive. Ma manyi. So this is the term that Buddha has used. So he is in a way training himself now. He is very much like instructing himself. So you have seen the true nature. So this is the conventional name that they have given. It appear like very beautiful. It appear like permanent. It appear like going to give you a lot of satisfaction. But understand its true nature. So this is the true nature. So he is reminding himself. So as much as possible, he is abandoning proliferation. Inhibiting the proliferation. So this inhibition of proliferation, stopping of the proliferation, avoidance of the proliferation helps tremendously to cut off the delight, to cut off the, you know, the sensual pleasure that we acquire, because it is a mentally proliferated happiness that we are going through. Now say, for example, when you see this chair, so you can mentally proliferate thinking it is the best chair and it's going to give you a lot of satisfaction, a lot of enjoyment, and this is the chair that I am going to have for my wedding or do this, do that. So there's a kind of a mentally imagined satisfaction tremendously impacting to this experience. Say you simply buy that chair and sit on it. It's a very simple experience. It is nothing much. So before you buy that, so there is a tremendous amount of mentally created enlarged happiness. Assumed happiness is there. So that's why Buddha emphasized sankappa rago purisassa kamo nate kamayani chitrani loke. Nate kamayani chitrani loke. So there are beautiful things in this world. They are not the problem.
I'm not hearing you.
So that's why Buddha emphasized nate kamayani chitrani loke sankappa rago purisassa kamo. So all these beautiful things are not the problem. So they don't really intrinsically have a kind of karma, pleasure. But how you think about it, how you proliferate about it, how you imagine about it, that creates lot of satisfaction. That creates lot of attachment. That creates lot of delight. So that's why we immediately want to go and acquire it. And once one understands that, so he is minimizing that. So he is minimizing that internal delight, illusory kind of delight that he is creating through his proliferation, he is minimizing. So that process has given him further understanding. Now Buddha talks about the Arahant. So in the Arahant level, So there is no object, no subject either. Now here actually there is a problem. There is subject and object, but the subject also is not there. Object is also not there. Experience is there. So he has thoroughly understood. So he knows there is no seer even. There is no subject who is seeing things. There is no I seeing things. There is no object that I am seeing, but seeing process is there. As I mentioned in the Kalakarama Sutta. So, but conventionally he can use the terms to explain others, okay, this is a chair, he can use the term, but he know it is merely a term. So this understanding, therefore, is something that we have to slowly develop. And so this is how Buddha explained that in the Mulapariyaya Sutta. That's true, actually, because we are, especially when we are bound by various others' conditions, and others are have certain amount of influence, and we are living a household life, so we have to maintain a family life. So then, actually, there are many others who are sometimes affecting by our whatever the actions. So therefore, there may be limits. So others, if they are approving, if they can understand the mentality, then that is a blessing. If not, there can be conflicts. This is the way it has happened even during the, you know, past. So one person is having one way of thinking. He wants to relinquish things. He wants to have only a little things. But others are not like that. They want to have many things. They want many acquisitions. So there's a conflict. So that we need to work out individually how I can manage these things. Is it possible for me to convince the others, or is it possible for me to wait some time till the others are also matured, or can I simply let them be without keeping them in my mind? Since others really need them, so let that be. But I don't need it, so I don't need to think about it. Even though they are not occupying the mind. So likewise, we need to have some kind of a compromise solution when others are also being affected by our decisions.
Yeah, I think that's what I sort of do as well. And, I understand. And sometimes, like you wonder, am I doing the right thing as well? So those dilemmas, sort of, contradictions comes as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it is a process, I guess. And as what you stated, it is a matter of having conversations as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, so I think that is good enough for those two questions for now. And so thank you so much.
Okay.
Now I'd like to invite Kumudini to present a question. Please unmute yourself.
Thank you. Vante, my question is, you said that when you do something good, give dana or whatever it is, not to feel, not to make a self of it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes.
But I have also heard in the past to take a joy from your actions and mm-hmm. feel happy.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do about those two things? Because I have even heard people telling that you should be making a list of all the good things have done so that somebody can read them to you in your last moments in life.
Correct.
So where's the cutoff, Bhante? Can you explain, please?
So these are the two sides, actually, in the mundane side of Sammaditti. So you believe in the karma, you trust the karma, and therefore you become a good person, so you are a generous person. You know generosity is a very important quality that we need to develop, and it prepares, or rather it gains a lot of satisfaction. And once you give someone something and you can appreciate that, you can think about it and you can happy about it. It is accepted. And by the way, when you are developing vipassana, more and more you understand there is no self. You understand, it is something I have created, this self. It is not intrinsically available, ongoing being is available here. There is no such self as such. And so why should I promote self then? So what are the factors promoting self? So among those factors promoting self is these factors. So these are the examples. Say you are giving something, but after giving, you are not forgetting it. Rather, you again and again taking it to the mind, and you say that I am the one given it. I am the one given it. So they are happy because of my good deed. So see that how good I am. So this is how, we in a way promote the self. So that's why in the previous case, Buddha mentioned Sasava Punya Bhagya Upadi Vepakka. It is a good deed. Right. It is a wholesome deed. It is a wholesome deed. And it will produce good results. But Sasava, it is generating influxes as well, particularly the ignorance. Because we are with the understanding there is I am. So I am the one given that. So I am a good person. That is how it is generating karma. But on the other hand, once you are into the vipassana, to the panyasikha, so you understand it is a non-self. I don't need to create a self, a person. So let me do the task anyway. But task is done, right. That's it.
Yeah, understood. But then on the reverse side, I remember when I was at Kalamboda, gone there for a few days to meditate, and when I went there, that kuti was really full of all kinds of bugs, and I had to clean it. And although I didn't want to, some insects got destroyed, and I went and told this to the monk there, and he said that, well, this is the way it goes, that you didn't intend to kill, and he told me not to think about it. So this is the opposite side, positive side, giving, and even on the negative side, not to think about it.
Correct.
Is that right?
Correct. Yes, correctly? Yes. Yeah, because your intention is to clean the house. You didn't have an intention to kill the bug, whatever it is. So you don't need to think too much about it and create a self out of that action either.
Mm-hmm. Right. But then also, Visakha, who became a Sotapanna at 7 years, isn't that what it is? She became Sotapanna at 7?
Yes.
She lived in palaces and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but how are, at what stage are you going to develop this non-desire for things like that? Is she going to give up the palace or something like that? She's still a lay person, right?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. No, that's the thing. That's what I want to mention.
I'm just trying to ask from you, at what stage do we relinquish all these belongings? If you are born into a fairly wealthy family, you have certain comforts and you live like in that way. If you don't become a monk or a nun, you still have those, right?
Yes.
Is it just that what I'm trying to think, what I think is what you're saying is don't have attachment for it.
So one thing is that,
correct?
Yeah, one thing is that you don't have attachment, and the other thing is that your mind is ready. It is not a force.
Right.
It is not a forceful letting go, but rather a smooth, happy letting go.
Right.
Till your mind is ready for that, just continue.
Thank you, Bhante.
Yeah.
Tervasarana.
Yeah. Tervasarana.
Much credit to you.
Yeah.
Darshika, please unmute yourself and present your question.
Manti, can you hear me?
Yes.
I want to get some advice. Previously, also I think I have asked. My problem is still, although I can stay in the empty space, I get a lot of inner talk, but it's all related to Dharma, like not talking of any other daily things. It's always related to when I listen to a sermon, it tends to reflect, and like if I get pain, because most of the time I have pain, so I say don't grumble, it's merely pain. It's not my pain. It's also honey. Those sort of things keep on talking. But sometimes I feel that I don't have enough inner silence. What can I do? It's much less because I have been observing, and as you said in a previous occasion, just not to engage in that. But still, each time some kind of a sermon, something I know, it will come and like tell me, yes, you're doing it right, but I remind yourself, like. So is it a problem or is it not good, or any advice, Panti?
Yeah, slowly abandon that. So basically, this is what we call Dhamma Vitakka Vasissanti. There's a very beautiful sutta called Pansu Dohavaka Sutta, where Buddha mentioned, this is very much like we have used a medicine to recover, but there are certain side effects of that medicine, so that also has to be slowly abandoned. So we have used Dhamma to convince ourselves to practice, And those dhamma related matters can come to the mind and occupy the mind. And that is good in a way, rather than some sensual related things or some harmful things are coming to the mind. But anyway, when it creates certain amount of disturbance to the mind, we need to recognize that also. And slowly, slowly, let it go so that mind remains calm, quiet. So that calmness, that quietude is something slowly may develop. And, you know, I mean, it's a slow process.
It's really when I'm seated or walking, I don't get it. When I'm in the meditation, it's been daily life. It keeps on telling. So in a way, I will automatically get rid of that.
Yeah,
that's
slow,
what you
I mean,
say.
So I mean, recognize it. Don't push it away, but simply let it. You are not supporting it. You are not adding more thoughts to it. You are not connecting it to a person, a monk, a book. Simply recognize it and let it be. Then it will slowly fade away.
Okay, thank you, Vante. Thank you so much.
Yeah, yeah.
Everyone's
online. Okay, I think we have spent 1.5 hours. Shalika, I hope you have no more questions.
Yeah, Vante, we don't have any written questions.
Fine. Then we'll wind up the session. We have spent 1.5 hours. And listen to a Dhamma sermon and discuss certain Dhamma. So all the merits that we have acquired, let's share with everyone, all the celestial beings, whoever in need of merits, and all the past relatives. And we wish these merits help us also to attain path fruition Nibbana. We'll recite the traditional verses. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang. Sambe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang. Sambe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Ettavata chamhehi sambatang punya sampadang. Sambe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhya. Akasattha chabummatta deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu sasanam. Akasattha chabummatta deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu desanam. Akasattha chabummatta deva naga mahiddhika. Punyantang anumoditva chirang rakkantu mamparam. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Idang vo nyati nang hotu sukita huntu nyatayo. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Imina punya kammena mame bala samagamo. Satang samagamo hotu yava nibbana pattiya. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Thank you, Bhante. Much merits to you for your valuable Dhamma talk on this Vedanta Pasa Sutta. Teruvan sannai, Bhante.
Teruvan sannai.